This holiday season, it's all about the bedroom. And Casper's Black Friday sale has up to 30% off everything you need to make your bedroom your happy place. Only Casper mattresses are made with 86 supportive gel pods to align your spine and eliminate aches and pains. And Casper bed frames are made from the highest quality materials. Give the gift of a better bedroom. Save up to 30% during Casper's Black Friday sale on now at Casper.com. Terms and conditions apply. See Casper.com/terms for more details.
Regina King for Cadillac Escalade.
When people ask, Regina, do you like to compete? I say, bring it on. Those are the moments that drive you to achieve more. And when you win, you keep reaching higher. To me, that's what the Cadillac Escalade represents. It's always evolving in technology, in design, everything. Because success isn't the end. It's just the first step to what comes next.
The 2021 Cadillac Escalade. Never stop arriving.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Weekly Podcast for the week of June 18th. I'm your host, William Liu. First off, apologies that the podcast didn't come out on Monday as it usually does. There's a bit of a scheduling mishap on my part, and so the podcast is out on Tuesday now. We don't have a guest, which is unfortunate, but we have plenty of Raptors news at least, which is good in a sense. The NBA draft is coming up on Thursday, and you know, although the Raptors don't have a pick, there's certainly no shortage of speculation when it comes to the Raptors. The most notable one and probably the most reputable one comes from Mark Stein of the New York Times, who reports that the Raptors are trying to get into that top 10. In his newsletter, which you should all really subscribe to, it's a really nice column to read every week. It's in your, you know, it's free. It comes in your mailbox. It's kind of old school, really, to do those newsletters, but still, I find it very enjoyable. In the newsletter, Stein mentions that the Raptors are looking to trade into that 8 to 10 range, and they want to draft Kentucky guard Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who grew up in Hamilton. Shout out to McMaster. But this is a bit strange, especially since he said that, you know, the Raptors are making everyone on the roster available at the right price, of course, which, you know, you've heard of in other reports, but it just seems strange to all of a sudden that they, you know, want to dive so heavily into the top of this lottery, especially since, you know, just a personal opinion, I don't really find myself that enamored with the actual top picks in this roster or in this draft. They don't look all that great, but I do like Shai. His stock has risen a lot over the years, especially in the last couple of months. Kentucky obviously didn't have a great season, you know, a lot of that comes down to sort of the mismatching talent they had. They had two centers on the floor once, you know, and Shai didn't really get control of the offense until later in the season, but he ran a lot of pick and rolls. He played a lot of pick and roll basketball, which is, you know, that's what is like 90% of NBA basketball. A lot of colleges, they don't run that. They run, I don't know, motion offenses and stuff like that that isn't necessarily pick and roll basketball. But Shai ran a lot of pick and rolls. I saw one site out there suggested that he had over 500 pick and rolls run for him, which is nice, right? And he's a nice pick and roll player. He can get downhill, crafty finisher. 6'6", 7-foot wingspan, so that really does fit the type of player that Masai likes to draft. You know, we know he's big on length, and, you know, he's not necessarily primarily a scorer. He's a good combo guard. He's a good passer out of the pick-and-roll scenario, and I think if he plays with more spacing in the NBA, he'll have a better time of recording assists. But, you know, like, it's a nice player. It's a nice player, but the Canadian thing is not the main thing, but it's a bonus. It's just a little bit strange, though, because, like, ironically, the player that he is most similar to in both stature and the style of game he plays is a lot like DeLon Wright, who the Raptors already have. Now, granted, Shai is 19 and DeLon is 26, so you know, that's obviously a big gap there, and you would have a lot more control over Shea. But it just seems a little bit strange that you would turn up your roster a little bit to get into the top of this draft, which, again, I don't really find it to be that impressive. Like, yeah, you can get a really nice big in this draft, but how many bigs, like, do the Raptors already have, right? And so then if you look at the rest of that roster or in the rest of that draft, I mean, none of them are really perfect, you know what I mean? And I'm not saying you have to get the perfect guy at the number 8 to 10 pick. Like, that's most drafts, you're not finding too much value there. But unless Doncic slides through pretty much everybody, which is not going to happen, then you're looking at guys like Trae Young, then you're looking at guys like Shea, guys like Michael Porter, who I like, but I mean, come on, we haven't even seen him play college basketball because he had a back injury. Like, you know, who knows if he's even going to be healthy? And the fact that the Kings are so heavily into him actually makes me not, you know, trust my own abilities to look at this player and think he's good, because if the Kings think he's good, he's probably bad. And so it's just strange that the Raptors try to trade into this draft like that. It's also strange because the Raptors would need to give up some pretty significant assets to get into that top tier. Again, if you're looking at the 8, 9, 10 range there, number 8 is Cleveland. I don't think Cleveland is going to trade that pick. And if they do, they need to get someone better than anyone on the Raptors, because they're trying to trade that pick, you know, maybe for Kawhi. And you know, again, that would be pretty crazy to even land Kawhi with just a number 8 pick. But they want to land an actual star to pair with LeBron. And while Kyle Lowry would actually play really well in Cleveland, it just doesn't fully make sense for them to do a trade like that, because I don't think LeBron looks at Cleveland and goes, well, if you have Kyle Lowry, then we're staying. Like, no, I don't think he's going to do that. I think he's going to go to L.A. still. And then if you look at number nine belongs to the Knicks. Not really sure what the Knicks want to do with that pick, but it seems like right now they're pretty devoted to the rebuild. I don't foresee them giving up number 9 for anybody the Raptors are offering. And then number 10, like, that one's probably the most realistic one. The Sixers have number 10. You know, the Sixers situation is very strange because Brian Colangelo got, you know, let go for his secret tweets and stuff like that. And now they don't have a GM. Brett Brown, their head coach, is now managing basketball operations, which, you know, I'm not quite sure how he would handle that. But, you know, like, they could use a guy like Kyle Lowry. Like, that's a perfect team for Lowry to go to. Like, there was some, you know, no actual reporting, but it was sort of, people put two and two together that Kyle Lowry was a free agent last year and he could go to Philadelphia, where he's from, and they could really use a point guard. But they didn't. They kept all their cap room open because they looked at this summer. They saw that LeBron was going to be a free agent. They saw that Paul George is going to be a free agent. I don't think they foresaw the Kawhi thing, but I think they kept their cap room open for this specific summer so that they can chase Paul George and LeBron. And, you know, I don't know if they can get those guys. I don't know what kind of intel they have in terms of whether or not those guys are going to pass on Philly or, you know, give them a chance. But I don't foresee Philly at this point in the draft, when they're so close with all this cap room about to come to them, that they're just like, well, instead we'll trade the number 10 for Kyle Lowry. Like, that's just, it's strange. Like, I could see them going for Kyle Lowry if they miss on all of this other stuff, but chances are pretty good that they're going to keep that cap room open and try to land, you know, one of those stars in free agency so they don't have to give up the number 10 pick. But that's just from sort of what the Raptors are looking at in terms of options. In terms of what the Raptors are looking at in terms of their own roster and why they would feel compelled to trade some of these guys, I mean, by all accounts, it seems like the Raptors want to stay competitive. You know, the reports of everyone being available at the right price, you get that. Like, I think every team should really look at it that way, and I think, strictly speaking, Masai has operated that way as well. If the right deal comes around, I don't think he's going to turn that down. I think he's going to move it. But I don't think there's this, like, grand intent to tear everything down this summer. And it would just be quite a shock, especially since, you know, I mean, part of it's unavoidable, but, you know, when Masai was asked about Kyle Lowry, and when the new head coach Nick Nurse was asked about Kyle Lowry and JV and these guys, you know, they've spoken about them like they have big plans for them in the upcoming year, like their core fixtures in the next year. So it would be a little bit surprising to see them move some players. If they move one of the two players, the Raptors are going to take a step back. They don't have a natural scorer on the roster to replace, you know, the 25 points a game DeMar is giving you. I know DeMar is sort of a question because there's obviously a lot of thought, especially people who, place more value in analytics, that DeMar is a guy that might be holding the Raptors back in terms of just his defense and his inflexibility in offense, him not shooting as much, him handling the ball so much, him relying on mid-range shots. And, you know, the last memory of DeMar from the playoffs was not good whatsoever. However, like, this is still a very important player, and it's beyond the fact of, just strictly speaking, what amount of points he gives you, but the fact that you have a system, you can build a system around a guy where, you know, he's going to be able to generate consistent offense for you. If you take that out of the, if you take that focus away out of DeMar and you move it to a pick, which is not going to produce for you immediately, as much as I like Shea, he's not going to replace DeMar for you immediately, or even ever, really, if you even if he develops, right? Like, who do you move that system to in terms of, like, is Kyle Lowry going to be that focal point? Because if Kyle Lowry is that focal point, and we saw in 2015, his body broke down after, like, 30 games, and he wasn't really right for the rest of the season after he carried them when DeMar was out for, like, 6 weeks with that, I forget what it was, like a hamstring pull or something. And so, like, you know, it's a consideration, right? It's going to, taking DeMar out is not as simple as, well, you know, his plus minus is this and that, his on-off court rating is this, we replace him with someone else, and it, all of a sudden it's fixed. I don't know about that. I guess part of it is also, like, you know, if you want to look at the upside of, if you want to move DeMar and you're optimistic, you probably think that, you know, Nick Nurse has sort of generated an offense that got put in place last season where DeMar's importance was de-emphasized in terms of his scoring. His passing was obviously more emphasized and more encouraged. And, you know, you might be able to replace him on the whole, on the aggregate, with, you know, more production from the rest of the roster. But, like, again, those are things that are nicer in theory. I don't know if they happen in practice. I think the Raptors rely a lot on DeMar, and moving him would be a huge change to what they do, and it would be a step back next year. And then when it comes to Lowry, like, I think that's one where everyone's in agreement. Even though the Raptors have depth at point guard, even though they want to re-sign Fred, which, you know, I'll talk about in a second, it's still not like there's nobody on the roster that's going to step in and take up everything that Kyle Lowry does. I mean, as much slander as Kyle Lowry catches online for this and that, but he's still a very underappreciated player for what he does. I mean, last season, Kyle Lowry, right? It wasn't an exceptional season for him. He transitioned. He had hot stretches. He had cold stretches. The man still was third in the NBA in three-point makes behind Paul George and James Harden, all right? So that's one. Number two, he led the league in charges. He transitioned to being both very good on the ball and very good off the ball. He didn't drive as much to the basket, but that helped him stay healthy, and he was fresh, and he went into the playoffs healthy for once. He was the Raptors' best playoff performer on the whole over the Washington series, which he was fantastic in the Washington series, multiple games with double-digit assists, pretty good defense against Bradley Beal and things like that. And, you know, he was not great in the Cavs series. I don't think anyone was great in the Cavs series, but if the Raptors had like one performer that had the best specific game out of that four game series, that four game embarrassment, it was Kyle Lowry. Like, Kyle Lowry had a really good game three, in which the Raptors, you know, tried to lead that comeback and LeBron hit that crazy, you know, running bang shot, whatever. We don't have to revisit that, but, you know, Kyle Lowry is very important to this team. He is so smart, so adaptable that he fills in. He's a perfect complementary star. And if you take him away from the Raptors, I mean, all the stats and everything has pointed to that, you know, the Raptors are going to suffer. So, you know, if you do decide to rebuild, then that's probably a decision that you should probably make, ahead of time. It's strange to hear this 2 days from the draft. And that's where I come back to this idea that, like, you know, Stein said everyone on the roster is available for the right price. And there was also a Salt Lake Tribune reporter, Tony Jones, who said that he heard that Kyle Lowry is very much available. I mean, I don't know. Who knows? But, like, I think part of it is also just around draft time, you hear a lot more speculation about everything. And that's why you should sort of take everything with as much a huge grain of salt, right? Because like sometimes information gets leaked. Information gets leaked usually purposely. I don't think a lot of it is accidental. But if it's purposefully, then like I don't think any of this stuff comes from the Raptors. I don't think the Raptors are suddenly saying to the league, "Hey, we want to draft this specific player, and we're going to offer anyone on our roster." That just doesn't seem like good business. That's not something that you would that would help the Raptors leverage. I don't think it would even help the Raptors in terms of getting a temperature of what the fan base thinks. I don't think that's how the Raptors operate in the past. They don't really leak reports to see how people react and then act accordingly, at least not under Masai's watch, because they have been notoriously, not leaky. Although in recent last 1 or 2 years, I feel like it's been a lot more leaky. But I would just be surprised. I don't think, again, like I think the Raptors, if the right guy comes, if the right package comes around, they will obviously reconsider. But, I would not be surprised if the Raptors did not trade one of their superstars, not superstars, one of their stars for the number 10 pick and some other, crap that comes along with it, at the trade deadline. But who knows? Like, it could happen. And at that point, I'm also okay with that happening, provided that the return makes sense. Because, like, there's two modes where the Raptors exist in, right? There's that world where this is a good team. There's a lot of accomplishments. And a lot of these players that are currently on the roster, especially the core guys, mean a lot. And they deserve to continue being here. And they should be traded for something of equivalent value. But then there's also the reality of like, look, we've been through 5 years of this. We've seen where it goes to. We've seen the absolute ceiling of this team. It's kind of been proven time and time again. If they bring a new coach, I mean, having brought a new coach in, like, I don't think that really changes anything realistically. It wasn't like Dwayne Casey was holding this team back so far that they were going to beat Cleveland or anything like that. It's a talent issue, right? And so if we've seen the absolute ceiling of this core and they want to change something that maybe in the short term, knocks the team back, but, they can sort of have more flexibility and try to make another move and this and that, change the style of play, I wouldn't mind that move either, right? It just has to, it has to come at the right price. And I guess that's ultimately what Stein is saying. The interest in Shea is kind of interesting because it does suggest they're going to move on the guards. But I don't know, man. I mean, as of right now, Shea kind of looks like DeLon. And it's weird to kind of blow up your team and get DeLon back. But I don't know. Who knows? If you do that, if they do end up doing that and they re-sign Fred VanVleet, then you have suddenly a whole bunch of point guards again. You could probably trade one of them again. So who knows? But that's probably the most significant rumor out there, the Stein report and the Jones report. In terms of actual, out in the open shit, Raptors GM Bobby Webster went on TSN radio and he said, quote, he said re-signing Fred VanVleet is, quote, the highest priority for the team. And he reiterated that no one in the organization has ever given a direct, edict to avoid the luxury tax. Having said that, Webster has also said the reason the Raptors have not gone into luxury tax for the last couple of years is because they personally felt that this team was not at that level. There was no need to go into a luxury tax. And we've seen them last year when they ducked the luxury tax by shipping off Damari Carroll for a first-round pick to the Brooklyn Nets. This year, I feel like the luxury tax is a little bit inevitable. The Raptors have about $127 million committed to next season. That's $127 million committed to 11 players. The luxury tax is $123 million. They want to re-sign Fred VanVleet. It'll probably cost them around $5 to $8 million, you got to believe, like five on the low end. 8.6 is the absolute max that anyone could offer him next year. He can obviously make more money down the line with this contract, but the first 2 years have to be mid-level. I don't know. It just seems very difficult. They don't have a pick to trade in this draft to sort of move off some salary. Also, the rest of the league is really short on cap space, which is why I ultimately think that, you know, if people just, like, the league has to take a year to actually pay for its mistakes. And, like, when the cap jumped incredibly in 2016, and the league opted against smoothing, everyone went nuts because that's just how it goes, right? You have to spend at minimum 90% of the salary cap every year. And the salary cap jumped $30 million. So, like, everybody had way more money to spend, and everyone made all these bad investments, right? You know, and you look around the league, like, it's not like the Raptors are the only team to make this mistake. Almost every single team made this error, and they spent way too much money. The salaries became temporarily inflated for that 1 to 2 year period. Like, every free agent was getting paid crazy dollars. Like, man, Evan Turner, you know, you know, Joakim Noah got a $72 million contract. Like, you can look at every single team. Every single team has an example of one of these mistakes. Serge Ibaka got paid $23 million a year. But, you know, at some point you have to pay for that error, right? Because, like, yeah, you're going to squeeze yourself to a point where you're going to need to sign new contracts. And you have all these old burdensome contracts on the books. You have a choice between giving up more assets to duck the tax, or you just pay the tax for a year. Because I think realistically, that's what the Raptors should be doing. They should just pay the tax for that 1 year. Because as of right now, if the Raptors re-signed Van Vliet and maybe moved off one of their contracts, right? Like, it's not going to be too bad, right? They're not paying, like, crazy luxury tax. Luxury tax becomes really burdensome when you're in the repeater tax and you're going to pay it in multiple years. And, you know, suddenly you're getting paid, you're getting taxed, like, you know, $2, $3, even $4 on every extra dollar you spend, which is how it gets really expensive. But, you know, you look at this team, a lot of the contracts are set to expire in, you know, after 2020. Like, that's the end of that three-year window. They have, like, over $80 million coming off the books at once that summer. It could be even they could have actually more financial flexibility even sooner if JV opts out of his deal in 2019 or if CJ Miles opts out of his deal in 2019. I don't really see out of that happening. But, like, it's not going to be too bad, right? Like, relief is just right around the corner. So it instead of trading another first-round pick to get off one of these contracts or, you know, instead of giving away some of your young prospects to try to weaken your team in the meantime just so that you can re-sign Fred VanVleet and try to make another run, like, it's just very complicated. At some point, you just got to say, look, you just got to bite the bullet and just essentially you know, pay for the first round pick that you would essentially pay for anyway, right? Like, how much, like, does the health of the franchise matter in terms of just, like, the strictly speaking, the basketball assets? Because if you wanted to, you could just keep this whole roster together, right? And, you know, I'm not advocating for that necessarily. Like, if someone comes around and wants to take Serge Ibaka for a salary dump and you don't have to offer anything else, I'm sure the Raptors would do it right now. But if that doesn't come around, then, you know, you have that choice of giving something up. And for a team that has made as much money as the Raptors have, you know, MLSC has, the prices for Raptors games have gone up so much over the last couple of years, and rightfully so. Like, you know, I think Raptors being in the market like Toronto, where there's a lot of rich people and everything like that, a lot of interest in basketball, the prices were really, really low, and that's partially because they were playing, you know, Leandro Barbosa as their go-to scorer before trading him for a top 55 protected pick. You know, like, yeah, of course, ticket prices are going to go up, but I mean, at the same time, like, you can't tell me this team hasn't made a ton of money recently. And if you got to pay the luxury tax for 1 or 2 years, and it's not even like a crazy luxury tax like what Cleveland pays or what Golden State pays, I'm just talking about like $2 or $3 million. $5 million into the tax, like, you just gotta bite the bullet and do it. Like, that's it, right? Like, you know, there's a lot of young talent on this team. We would hate to see it go to waste in a salary dump. And, you know, it just, personally, I don't think it makes sense to pay the luxury tax right now, but, like, it just, you know, in a world where all things are equal, but all things are not equal. Like, that one cap spike really did put everyone into this position, and you eventually have to pay it sometimes. You just have to pay the penalty. You just pay it one year, and it's probably done. So that's probably what I would do. But there is that question of Norman Powell, who, you know, it's really unfortunate. It's such a huge bummer. Norm, obviously, we were all ecstatic last summer when it was announced that, you know, Norm had signed that four-year, $42 million extension right around the time Josh Richardson was signed. And, man, I was high on Norm. I love Norm. Everyone loved Norm. I mean, you know, I remember these stats like, you know, like they're written on the back of my hand or something. But Norm made 18 starts in 2016-17 for Damari Carroll, who was in and out of the roster with, you know, with this injury or another injury or whatever, just being ineffective. And Norm, in those 18 starts, averaged 15 points a game, shot 49% from the field and 40% from three, and was, generally speaking, pretty good on defense. And so, like, it made absolute sense to extend him. And then, you know, that's what made it such a huge bummer, right, that he has sort of regressed to this point. And this point is that, you know, Josh Lewenberg reports that the Raptors were gauging trade interest for Norman Powell, and that, you know, they could look to trade him before the draft, or at least, you know, sometime before July 1st, because, well, on the financial side, Norm is currently making $1.5 million. The extension is going to kick in on July 1st, and then he's going to make $9.4 million, right? So it'd be a lot easier to trade him right now on that 1.5 figure than later at the 9.4 figure. But, you know, on the other side is just, it's just really sad to see what happened to Norm, because, you know, he worked so hard. I remember watching him at Crown League. He was electric, way better than Delon Wright in that one game. And, you know, the two of them, I remember there was like confetti that fell from, you know, the rafters, and they were talking about how it's our time to take, you know, more of a bigger role on this team. And Norm was even potentially going to be a starter. And, you know, from that point onward, it got really bad in terms of just, you know, OG comes in, he develops really quickly. It's obviously a great thing, but he, you know, he usurps Norm from the starting rotation. And then Norm can't find his way with the bench because the bench develops their own identity. And it just, the whole year, Norm was just struggling to find any sort of piece in the rotation. He couldn't do it. The Raptors had so many productive players that, towards the end, man, he didn't even play. Like, he didn't even play. Like, the Raptors were going to some crazy stuff like CJ Miles guarding Kevin Love before, you know, Norm was even out there on the floor at all. And it's just disappointing because I think expectations for Norm were way higher than this. But if you were going to potentially cut a salary, Norm seems like the kind of guy that would be the easiest one to shed. Now, the reason for that is because this is a cost-controlled young player, and if some team was interested in him, and presumably some team is going to be interested in him, this would basically be like a free situation. You know, it's like when you, I don't know, man. Like when you let's say you win, I don't know, you roll up the rim and you win a new Honda Civic, and then all of a sudden your old car, you can just put that up for sale. But you never really wanted to put that old car up for sale in the first place. It's just circumstances, you know, dictated that this is a buy low opportunity. And that's essentially what happened with Norm here, right? Like, you could get Norm for free at this point, which Lewenberg also reports that, you know, the Raptors probably won't get too much back for him. But, you know, I'm sure there's some team out there that is probably looking at Norm like, hey, we believed in him. We see the situation here that, you know, the Raptors have no money available, and, you know, we could take Norm off your hands, and it could be a free sort of situation. And, you know, maybe someone does buy into that. The Raptors should have some leverage because he's only 25 years old, and he has shown both on a playoff level, especially in that Milwaukee series when he got into the starting lineup, the Raptors were 3-0 and won that series. That, you know, Norm is a guy that can contribute, and that in a team in a league that is so wing heavy nowadays, like, someone should be around to take on Norm. But, you know, I don't know. Most of it just depresses me. If the Raptors wanted to move Norm and just sort of like kick the can down the road and try to take that money off the books, which that erases $9 million off the books next year. Then you add in Fred for, I don't know, let's say let's be optimistic, let's say 5, right? So then you're looking at like $123 million. So you're right at that luxury tax mark. Maybe you shift another couple salaries around and you add some minimum guys. And maybe, you know, you could sneak to the point where, yes, you can sort of just narrowly duck the tax again, like what the Raptors did this year. But I don't know. I mean, it just kind of sucks, right? Because it was such a great story for Norm for like 2 years. The Raptors, as you recall, traded Gravis Vasquez, who was already unhappy with only 1 year left on this deal, to the Bucks for a first-round pick and also a second-round pick that turned into Norm. Then Norm has that breakout moment in the playoffs against the Pacers, and you know, he continues to progress and he keeps showing more and more flashes in the next season. And it just felt like this was found money, right? Like, oh, wow, this is great. The Raptors had this, you know, player that they got basically for nothing. And they got him into a nice, you know, cost-controlled contract moving forward. And then all of a sudden, it's going to turn into a point where the Raptors are going to be like, well, turns out we didn't really deserve this money in the first place, and we're going to have to give it away for free. Like, that's just – it's a bummer. It really is a bummer. But, I mean, it's ultimately a financial decision, right? Like, if they want to keep Norm, they can do it. They can keep Fred VanVleet and Norm at the same time. It's just whether or not they want to pay the luxury tax. And arguably – now, okay, hold on. If you want to keep Powell, like, you should have a plan for him going forward. If you want to keep the whole roster together and keep Powell for that, just for basically to run everything back, that doesn't quite make sense. Because as this season showed, there was no actual opportunity, no role for Powell on this team, right? But if, you know, let's say a crazy trade happened and, I don't know, like, one of the guards got moved, you know, probably DeMar, because DeMar is in the same position as Norm, then, okay, there's more of an opportunity. You're not going to replace DeMar with Norm, but, you know, at least there's an actual chance to actual playing time in which he can actually justify his contract. If that happens, then, of course, keep Norm. But I don't know. It doesn't really seem likely the Raptors are going to move on their big pieces. And so if you're not going to do that, then, and you're going to keep everyone else, then you're, you know, probably going to get rid of Norm, which is, again, very upsetting. You know, I do like Norm a lot. In other news, more about the draft, actually. I feel like the Raptors could buy a pick in the upcoming draft. The Raptors have no current picks, no first-round pick, no second-round pick. But, this feels like a draft where the Raptors can buy into the second round. For example, the Hawks have number 30 and number 33. The Nets have number 40 and number 45. The Sixers, in particular, have number 38, number 39, and 56. With only, you know, a limited number of roster spots available. Most of the Sixers players are already in place. So, like, they probably can't accommodate all these new picks. So they probably got to trade some of them. I could definitely foresee the Raptors spending $5.1 million to sort of buy one of these picks, especially since, you know, again, the Raptors are pretty tight against the luxury tax, and they've been really good at turning these late picks into actual productive pieces. You look at Siakam, you look at VanVleet, who was just straight up undrafted OG, DeLon, you know, even Bebe, who they got for free, like all these guys, Norm, you know, ironically, you know, they've done really well with the end of this, basically, you know, low draft picks. They've shown a really nice ability to identify talent that maybe the rest of the league has a blind spot for. And so I would very much like to see that happen in this draft. I really expect it. I also think the Raptors could probably sign an undrafted player, you know, similar to the VanVleet thing. Granted, VanVleet is like the best case scenario where you just have this player that is completely found money. But, you know, if they've done it once, they could probably do it again. At least that's the hope anyway. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't think it'll be a completely dry draft period for the Raptors. I think the Raptors will make a little bit of noise on draft day. I just don't think it's gonna be like huge noise, like trading one of their main pieces and getting one of the top picks in this draft, because I don't know, it would just be very strange. In other Raptors news, the franchise announced that Jama Mahalalela has replaced Jerry Stackhouse as the next head coach of the Raptors 905. You know, Stack went to join the Grizzly staff as a lead assistant after the Raptors ultimately went to Nurse, which makes sense. You know, I feel bad. I, I, again, it's a situation like Norm where the Raptors, you know, got this guy, they've developed him. Stack has really shown a lot of promise, and, you know, there's a lot of love for Stack on this podcast. And, you know, he's taken them to the finals twice, and one of them he won the title, and he's done it with different caliber of players as well, and he's done a great job of building that program. But, you know, the Raptors had that opening. It didn't come. It wasn't going to go to him, and so he figured he might as well go somewhere else and try something new. And Memphis is a situation where if they pivoted to a rebuild, which is very, very possible, Jerry Stackhouse would have a foot in the door in terms of becoming that interim, because I don't really think they're that, you know, committed to J.B. Bickerstaff for their long-term head coach. But anyway, this is about Jama, and, you know, it's a great, great opportunity for him as a coach. It's very, I think, appropriate. Like, you know, in a developmental setting, right, you want someone that's really encouraging, really positive, really upbeat, and that's what Jama is. Like, he's kind of like a Canadian version of Jesse Mermis. If you guys remember, Jesse was the first Raptors 905 head coach. He got hired after a year to join Luke Walton on his staff as an assistant coach. And, you know, it's the kind of the same guys, right? Like, really upbeat, really about development. And, you know, for Jama, like, this is probably a good opportunity for him to go down there, you know, learn more about play calling, learn about sort of just the management of the team overall, like not just an assistant, but being responsible for the whole team as the head coach. And, you know, it makes sense on the Raptors side too, because they need somebody to take over that that spot. And, you know, they don't really have that many other options internally. Like, it's, you know, there's a lot of openings on the head coaching spot right now. Like, I don't know how many they're going to retain, but they were basically picking from Jama, Patrick Mutombo, who the Raptors just introduced to the coaching staff last year, and also Jim Son, who was with the Raptors previously but had just come back into the organization last year. And so, like, Jama had way more seniority than those guys. And, you know, as a young coach, it's a good opportunity. So I'm going to miss Stack, though. I really will miss Stack. I don't think Jama's nearly going to be as quotable as Stack. It's not going to be as many great stories as there were with Stackhouse, and I think Stack did a great job, but... you know, now it's Jama's turn to develop into a great coach. In terms of the other stuff, the Raptors also again have to fill out their assistant coaching staff around Nick Nurse. So far they don't have anyone else. Michael Grange of Sportsnet is reporting that the Raptors are interested in Sergio Scariolo, who was the Spanish national team head coach. I don't know if he still is, but, you know, cool. Like, the one thing I remember with him is that the Raptors tried to hire him back in 2015, and he declined. And so I don't know why he would, you know, make the decision again. Maybe he thought a head coach position was opening. It's not going to come for him. He's not really on anyone else's radar. If he wants to do the Raptors thing, like, he could. Who knows? I mean, you could look at this situation in terms of the Raptors could change head coaches again soon-ish. Like, Nick Nurse only signed a 3-year deal, and coaches don't usually coach on the last year of their contract expiring, so it's really like a 2-year deal. And if it is a 2-year deal, then it kind of matches up with the Raptors' 2020 timeline. So who knows? But, I mean, like, the Raptors didn't interview him for head coach either, so if they're interested in him, you know, cool. They probably want someone for experience. That's what Nick Nurse said. Really values guys that have been head coaches elsewhere, and, you know, being the head coach of Spain is pretty nice. I mean, Spain has had a really nice run here with basketball. So that's one possibility. Grange also mentioned Phil Handy, who was an assistant with the Cleveland Cavaliers. You know, cool. I don't really know too much about Phil Handy. All I know is that he gave the Cavaliers this huge inspirational speech. And then the Cavaliers, you know, had that magical run in 2016 where they, you know, upset the Warriors after being down 3-1. Again, Handy seems like a development guy, seems like a pretty tough guy. You know, who knows? Again, it's hard with assistant coaches. But, you know, he has a good resume. He's worked with a lot of stars. And, you know, if the Raptors want to go that way, sure, why not? if you want to see toughness in the team, I mean, it would be nice to bring in a head coach that, you know, can deliver it. Because as much as I believe Nick Nurse, you know, has, you know, qualities of someone that can inspire our team to be tough, like, he seems like an upbeat guy, mostly, like a positive feedback kind of guy. So maybe you want a back up. I don't know. And there was also a report, again, earlier in this week from Mark Stein that the Raptors tried to interview, you know, Chris Finch, who now works for the Pelicans. The Pelicans denied it because it was a lateral move. Not that cool, in my opinion. But, you know, I get it. Like, the code is usually you let the person go for an actual promotion, not that you just let a guy go for a lateral job. And so, I don't know. The Pelicans chose to hold on to him. That's cool, whatever. But, yeah, I mean, the connection there is that Finch was, you know, he coached with Nick Nurse for the greatest for the Great Britain team. So, I don't know. I guess that's one of his good friends. He was familiar with him. He wanted to hire him. Anyway, as it currently stands, Raptors have no assistant coaches, so they want to fill it out. But, I mean, there's no immediate need to get these assistant coaches. Like, you know, chances are that the player – like, what you want assistant coaches to be doing right now is to be training your players and things like that. And I'm sure the Raptors players are being trained just, you know, with other trainers and stuff. Like, that's what most players do in the summer anyway. So I don't think it's a big worry. It's not a big concern. I would obviously prefer them to fill it sooner rather than later. But given that Nick is not, like, a super established NBA guy who's been around forever, I don't – it's probably going to take him some time to put together a team. Yeah, I mean, also taking your time with that is good too, because it helps fill summer content. You know, because otherwise we're just scraping the bottom of the barrel. And in terms of scraping the bottom of the barrel, I'm going to sign off with this last point about, you know, crazy fantasy trades right now that the Raptors fans are talking themselves into. Perhaps it's because I'm spending too much time looking at these rumors. I don't know. I go into these forums a lot. I look at, you know, the Raptors public forums. I look at the comments. I look at, you know, the Toronto Raptors Reddit page. Sometimes I go on a Real GM as well. Like, it depends. But, I mean, the two most crazy scenarios you're seeing out there right now is, like, either one, Chandler Parsons number four for DeMar, which is, I don't think it's ultimately that realistic. Again, it's like a supersized version of that Shea thing, where it's like, you know, it would be such a dramatic move for the Raptors to make that you would think they would have dropped some hints along the way. And if you really, really want to look for the hints, like Zach Lowe said the other day that, oh man, Rex Kalamian is really close with DeMar. It's like, all right, cool. But it's not like now that Rex has left for LA that, you know, DeMar is going to follow him out the door. I don't think that's the case. But, you know, it would be kind of crazy. I also think it would be kind of a hard sell too, because you're kind of pulling a fast 180 on the fans. And, you know, this franchise is trumped up DeMar so much, and rightfully so. He's done a great service for this franchise. And so sort of just let him go for a draft pick and Chandler Parsons, which is like one of the worst contracts in the league. Like, it would be very shocking, and it'd be kind of hard to accept, even if I see the logic in it. They must really, really hit on the number four pick then, because, like, man, DeMar was a really good player, and if you look at the number four pick, I mean, who knows what that could be? Maybe it could even land you, like, Luka Doncic. It could land you one of these bigs like Jaren Jackson, who, you know, could be like Draymond with some scoring, which would be great. Or, you know, Mo Bamba, who looks like Rudy Gobert with kind of a jumper and really, really marketable and well-spoken. But, like, come on, man. Like, the expectation for that pick was going to be pretty high. And I think it's just, I don't know. I don't really foresee the Raptors doing something like that. And then the other thing is just trading for Kawhi Leonard, which, you know, I guess what's working most in the Raptors' favor is that the Spurs probably would prefer to trade him to the Eastern Conference if they trade him at all. But, I mean, if Kawhi is hell-bent on going to the Lakers and you want to intercept it for a one-year rental, I don't really see what that does for you. And in terms of just interesting, The thing is, like, whatever the Raptors can offer, like, I feel like the Celtics or the Sixers can intercept with a better offer, right? Like, what's the Raptors' best offer? Like, you give up, I don't know, like, Siakam, OG, and JV for him. First off, does that even improve your team? Like, I guess it does because Kawhi is amazing and he's healthy. He's a top three player. But, like, if you're losing all that depth and you have no financial flexibility, I don't really see that happening. And also, B, like, I feel like just the Celtics can offer a better package. Like, if they just say, like, hey, straight up, we'll give you Jaylen Brown and one of our future 2019 first-round draft picks. You know, they own one from the Grizzlies. They're one from the Kings. Like, those are all really, really, really nice pieces that could be, you know, lottery picks and stuff like that. You give them two of those draft picks and Jaylen Brown. I don't think the Spurs would say no, right? So, like, I could easily see another team trumping that offer for the Raptors. So, I don't really see the Kawhi to Toronto thing. I mean, it's fun to sort of, I don't know, play with the trade machine and see and Photoshop Kawhi in a Raptors jersey, but I don't know. I think that's unrealistic. If the Raptors wanted Kawhi, we should have just got him in the draft, but we didn't. We didn't. So anyway, that does it for the podcast. Again, apologies that it came out late and that there's no guest, but the draft is coming up, and so we'll definitely recap that on the night of the draft if anything crazy happens. And you know, if nothing crazy does happen, then I'll probably just, you know, catch you at the usual time next Monday. So thank you to everyone for listening.
Regina King for Cadillac Escalade.
When people ask, Regina, do you like to compete? I say, bring it on. Those are the moments that drive you to achieve more. And when you win, you keep reaching higher. To me, that's what the Cadillac Escalade represents. It's always evolving in technology, in design, everything. Because success isn't the end. It's just the first step to what comes next.
The 2021 Cadillac Escalade. Never stop arriving. Regina King for Cadillac Escalade.
When people ask, Regina, do you like to compete? I say, bring it on. Those are the moments that drive you to achieve more. And when you win, you keep reaching higher. To me, that's what the Cadillac Escalade represents. It's always evolving in technology, in design, everything. Because success isn't the end. It's just the first step to what comes next.
The 2021 Cadillac Escalade. Never stop arriving.